this is making me very angry, because here comes the colonel. Here comes the colonel.
Oh, yeah, another comedian had to sneak in here from the auditions for Comedy Central down the hall. All right, welcome back. The second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow, here on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science, open innovation. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. In just a minute, I'm going to introduce you to Tashmeen Sharma, whose specialty is, let me see, I've got to get this right here, scientist at the University of North Texas Health Science Center, and her passion lies in the scientific exploration of neural regeneration. Fascinating gal. She's going to be speaking at MetroCon. Right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information. Get the coin jar going here.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help
you? Yes, we've thrown in the coins and awakened the spirit of the fountain who knows all. Hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. Why we threw in the coins. All right. Oh, spirit of the fountain, here you go. This is one you should know. Whose curse got its start in 1922? A curse in 1922 got its start when Lord Carnarvon died of an infection after nicking himself shaving in Egypt. The curse that Lord Carnarvon got when he died from an infection after nicking himself shaving in Egypt. What curse was it, O Spirit of the Countin?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the other.
Aha, the Spirit of the Fountain knows for sure. The curse that got its start in 1922... when Lord Carnarvon died of an infection after nicking himself shaving in Egypt? If you said the curse of the mummy, you're close. It's the curse of King Tut. King Tut's curse. All right, back to our program. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. All right, right at the moment, I want to introduce you to Tashmeen Sharma. She likes to be called Tass, and she's a scientist at the University of North Texas Health Science Center. Her passion is the scientific exploration of neuroregeneration, and you could imagine how exciting that would be. Studies including, you know, the relief of glaucoma, traumatic brain injury, and an interesting thing of microgravity-associated visual impairment for NASA. We want to get into that just a little bit. Also, is an expert on CRISPR, the base genome editing technology, of which we've studied here in this program on several occasions, and we're going to ask her more about that. So welcome to the program, Tass.
Hi, how are you?
Well, it's so wonderful to have you. And you're going to be speaking at the MetroCon conference. It's going on November 7th in at the Hearst Convention Center in Texas, about halfway between Dallas and Fort Worth. And we're very very proud to have you on the program. You're going to be giving an interesting talk, which is a little bit above my head. Novel ex vivo transliminar autonomous systems to study the effects of interocular and intracranial pressure differential on the central nervous system neurons. So let's bring that down from maybe 10,000 feet down to the street level and kind of explain to our listeners what your study's about.
Yeah, so this new model system that we have designed actually is studies the effects of intraocular pressure and intracranial pressure. So in a lot of diseases that we look at, which is like traumatic brain injury, even glaucoma, as well as microgravity associated visual impairments, what we see is that there is a pressure differential that is going on at the base of the eye, which is at the optic nerve head, as we call it. So where the eyeball is connecting to the optic nerve that goes all the way to the brain. So that region is very, very sensitive to any kinds of mechanical insults. So if you see or talk about astronauts in space, they have high pressure around that nerve, and because of that it causes swelling of the nerve, and that causes visual impairment. Well, in cases like glaucoma, that pressure is low, and because of that it could cause a bowing effect at that nerve, and that causes visual impairment. And our model system actually allows us to use human donor eyes that we can put within this system and then independently regulate the pressure within the eye and the pressure around the optic nerve, which is outside the eye, and study changes at that region.
So specific stem cells, derived neurons in this model system, allows the precision medicine testing. And when you remove this pressure or alter the pressure in some manner of act, you help with the glaucoma or the traumatic brain injury for visual. And that also has to do with visual impairment from space. Is that correct?
Yes. Because if we can regulate these pressure changes that are going on around the eye, because there's a huge difference in pressure when you're in space and when you're back on Earth, so this would give us the opportunity to basically modulate the intracranial pressure, which is the pressure that's surrounding that nerve that could be modulated.
So you will... You'll be able to monitor the pressure and analyze the pressure, and that's all important. But then you get into CRISPR-based genome editing technology, that is the changing of the actual DNA in order to affect a change in the particular ocular. Is that how that fits into?
Yes, so one of the other goals of this whole project, of course, the long-term goal, is that not only can we take human donor eyes that we are getting from donors, but we could actually take this human donor eye and remove all the cells that are previously associated with an individual, and then use real-life patient skin cells, transform them into stem cells and then neurons, and then basically see this human donor eye with a patient's cells and then study pressure changes. So that's one part of it. The other part is that there's a lot of genetics involved with normal tension glaucoma, primary open angle glaucoma. So we could, there are specific genes like myosin that can regulate pressure or high tension glaucoma pressure, and so we could go in and correct these genes using the CRISPR technology and then transplant them and see if there is pressure differences, or in normal tension glaucoma patients where there is no intraocular pressure but there is still disease, how do we change the genetics and still have a normal functioning eye that is not affected by any of these pressure changes.
Now, how long have you been working on these procedures? Has this been a major portion of your study in your adult life?
Yes, I have been actually. As my PhD, with Dr. Clark up here, Dr. Abedaf Clark here at North Texas Eye Research Institute, I did my PhD studies with neuroprotection and in glaucoma, and then I went to University of Iowa where. My postdoctoral studies were basically in stem cells and CRISPR and different kinds of eye-related diseases, retinitis pigmentosa, glaucoma. And that's where I've gained kind of my knowledge on CRISPR and stem cells, and now I've brought it back to the Institute here. And that's when we started developing this model and trying to basically have a system that we could study that is more than intraocular pressure.
Has to be a fascinating study, and recently then the mapping of the human genome, and now we're involved with all the things that we can do from the genome editing and CRISPR coming along. Incidentally, for the audience that don't know, it's a capital C, capital R, capital I, capital S, capital P, capital R, pronounced CRISPR, but it all stands for a big, long name, and that we just call it CRISPR. So, yes, I can imagine that now, then, with the mapping of the human genome, and along comes CRISPR, it opens all sorts of different things to happen. Can you tell us, sound like they're going to be cures, I guess, and can you give us an indication about when great strides are going to be made? I understand you're already making some great strides. When are they going to be applicable to people medically?
So, of course, as all sciences, that there's a lot of testing and preclinical testing and clinical testing of all this. But this gives us at least a starting point. Not only that, like if we have current therapeutics that are out in the market, which is glaucoma therapeutics or any kind of other therapies that are involved with CSF or central spinal fluid pressure lowering. Therapies, we can just put it in our model system because our human donor eyes can survive in these model systems for almost 2 to 3 weeks, and then so we can bait them with whatever therapies we want. And because we have two different chambers, one is the inside of the eye chamber, one is the outside of the eye chamber, so we can use two different drugs, therapies, test this and see where it is going. So even though we are in the initial testing phases, but this could be something that can be taken quite far.
Wow. Fascinating. Now then, I want to ask you about your work with NASA. Kelly spent a year up there, and he got back, and of course he couldn't walk, and it was his joints and his bones and his muscles and everything had all kind of gotten used to zero gravity. But I've heard nothing about visual impairment. When was it first noticed that that in zero gravity or light gravity that there's visual impairment? Could you fill us in on some of that?
So yes, visual impairment has been extensively kind of studied for astronauts, because when astronauts do come back from space, there is a lot increased evidence of swelling in the eye. They cannot see, and studies were done initially to see what was wrong. Visual function test, IOP related changes, but very recently even Dr. Berdahl has done a lot of extensive studies where he's looked at different kind of astronauts and patients and seen that cerebral spinal fluid pressure or intracranial pressure is significantly higher sometimes in astronauts, but also that in glaucoma patients, it's lower. So when we're talking about visual impairment or intracranial pressure changes within the astronauts, and they're having the swelling at the optic nerve, it causes kinking, it causes of that optic nerve, it causes this swelling within the disc of the optic nerve, which is the region between the back of the eye and the optic nerve, and that causes blurry vision, all sorts of visual impairment-related consequences.
I can imagine this is an incredibly important study. I mean, we're talking about sending astronauts on long voyages to Mars and long periods in space. It would be regrettable they arrive at Mars and they're blind or have a lot of difficulty, especially when there wouldn't be any way up there to treat it. So is this something that you're working to kind of preempt any eye condition problems before we send humans into long space?
Yes, so just now our model system, we just filed a provisional patent for it, so we are trying to commercialize this in the near future, hopefully. But, that is our goal, is that if we can study, because this would not, one of the most important parts about testing ICP or intracranial pressure is through a spinal tap, and that is a pretty invasive procedure. So we can actually take just a human donor eye and study just changes ex vivo, or basically outside the human system. So that kind of reduces some of the invasive techniques that are currently seen or observed or utilized to study these changes.
So ex vivo is outside the human body, and you're doing this with donor eyes, and that's how you're able to accomplish the things that you're accomplishing. Now, let me ask you, when you give your talk at the Metricon conference on November 7th at the Hearst Convention Center. What's going to be the takeaway? What do you want your audience to learn and to come away with at that talk?
What I would like to see is that what potential our model system actually holds, where we can take it, and if commercialization is something that is doable in the near future, that what kind of therapies or targeting that we can do. Not only that, we can utilize patient-specific cells so that we can do individualized treatments or therapies that are working in certain patients and not working in other patients. We can do that all outside the human body ex vivo. In addition, our system is a sealed chamber system, so if we needed to take this outside in space or other areas where we can do microgravity associated experiments, then we would be able to do that without initially testing it in humans directly.
Wow. Well, it's going to be a fascinating talk. We're going to really look forward to seeing you and hearing the things you have to say there. We'll enjoy meeting you firsthand. And I wonder, Taz, I'm sure you've been mentored during the course of your life, maybe as a little girl, I don't know, but certainly as growing up and things, and you probably have an opportunity to mentor other people right at the moment. Do you have a word of wisdom for us, maybe words to live by, some sort of creed that we can pass on to the listeners, some word of wisdom that somebody gave you that really stuck with you during the course of your maturing into the scientist that you are now?
Well, one of the things my dad always actually says is that, science is all about just being at it. It's about persistence. It's about exploration. It's about just sticking with it. Sometimes there are really bad days, sometimes really good days, but it's always remembering the highs over the lows.
Okay, Tasnim Sharma, currently a scientist at the University of North Texas Health Science Center, scientific exploration of neuroregeneration and the CRISPR-based genome editing technology, and working with NASA on associated visual impairment and glaucoma, traumatic brain injury. We've been so fascinated to have you with us. We're looking forward to seeing you and meeting you and hearing what you have to say at the Metricon conference on November 7th. Thanks so much for being with us.
Yes, I am really privileged to have this conversation, and I would like to give my special thanks to also my current mentor, who's Dr. McDowell, who, she's kind of been the driving force for this technology and helping me with all of this stuff right now.
Well, you're so good. Thank you so much. We really appreciate having you.
Yes, have a good day. Bye-bye.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. You're listening to the Science News Radio Network. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. And right now I want to introduce you to author Dan Cohen. Okay, well, let's talk about your book for just a minute, okay? And the promo material that I've gotten so far. I haven't received the book yet, as a matter of fact, so I haven't read it, so I'm totally dumb on this. But I did receive the promo material, and the book reveals how addiction to ego is the source of all fears. Incidentally, the name of the book, Addicted to My Ego. And it reveals how addiction to ego is the source of all fears, painful emotions, addictions, and unhappiness, and how at its core, ego believes its emotions, addictions, and unhappiness, and how it is the its core addicted to be belief is unlovable and unworthy. And I'm just wondering, is our current occupant of the White House your inspiration for this particular book?
I was actually going to write him and ask if I could use his picture on the cover, but I didn't think it would fly.
Well, as vindictive as he is, he might have tried to get back to you in some other way. But yeah, it seems to fit, doesn't it?
Yes, it certainly does. Yes, no, the you know, the issue is we all have an ego. You can't have a life without an ego, because mm-hmm. the ego is really a composite of your beliefs and your attitudes. It's the filter, you know, for what you really are. So if we really all are spiritual beings, if we are soul-based, then imagine that consciousness filtering through the brain with all the stored beliefs that you've created in your lifetime. And so you basically end up presenting yourself through all of your filters, essentially all of your psychology. And unfortunately, when you look at everybody's coping strategies, and let's face it, we all have them. You know, we all deal with things at some point when we're threatened, we deal with things in a defensive manner often, or we just sort of give up and suppress our own feelings.
Sure.
But either way, at the root, when you peel the onion and you get down to the core belief, at the base of every coping strategy is, as you mentioned, unworthy or unlovable. And that's unfortunately where the ego comes from. And it, for many people, it takes a lifetime to try to conquer, you know, that negative belief.
Wow. So your book will explore that when we get a chance to read it, and we'll be able to study about how our ego is gets in the way of a lot of sound things that we might be doing. So can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, many of us tend to undermine ourselves very, very often, because mm-hmm. the vantage point that we live our lives is more defensive than it needs to be, as opposed to sort of being open and honest with ourselves, recognizing a lot of these self-beliefs that are negative, and learning to challenge them, you know, and learning to accept ourselves as we are, and to grow from that vantage point.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Things I think, one is the importance of networking and talking to others who are considering doing some of the things that you're interested in doing, or maybe already doing that. You know, there is a lot of benefits to be had from learning from things that others have already gone through. And I think, you know, you always hear that networking and it's who you know is so important, and I think that's very true. Some of the opportunities that Arlington has today that we're working through are because of relationships we've been developing and people we've been talking to. And then I think the other thing I would add, just because I've been going through it myself, is if you are beginning pilot projects that are very much kind of first stage technology or technology-based transportation solutions, you need to prepare yourself. There's a price to pay when you're testing the early stages of technology, and I think it's exciting, and there's a lot to be learned and a lot to be shared with others, but you need to go into it knowing and expecting that you're going to have challenges that you're going to have to overcome. And I think that's part of what makes it fun and exciting, but that's something that you need to have in your mindset when you start a project like this. My name is Alicia Winkelbleck, Assistant Director of Community Development and Planning for the City of Arlington.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
You live tomorrow, 'cause you know it will be there. I am waiting for you.